Hashem, the God of Mercy, Rabbi Chaim Bravender, on Slichot.
So, we're about to say the Slichos of Erev Rosh Hashanah, which is a special, some unique elements, but I'd like to go back and make sure we all understand why we say Slichos. There are psukim, well-known psukim, that seem to indicate that there's something that slicha, that the notion of slicha and slichos are special. Or this special bakasha that we make during the Aseres Yemei Tshuva, which is a repeat of the psukim, Hashem, Hashem, Kerachum v'chanin, are understood. Chazal say, the Gemara Rosh Hashanah points out that these psukim were taught by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Moshe Rabbeinu, and they should be said b'sha'as bakoshas kapora. And they're special. They're not like any other psukim. Everybody knows that there are many psukim in Tehillim, Tehillim in general, a psukim of Tefillah and Shtapchus Halev, the psukim that represent the deepest human emotions. We say them in times of despair, times of joy. And the words, as the Rambam points out in Hilchos Tefillah, words are very important in order for us ourselves to get to the bottom of our feelings and our emotions. It's not true that we know what we are inside and the words are just a faint expression of the profundity of our feelings. It may be quite the contrary, something that we may have occasion to speak about, that the words are what enables us to straighten ourselves out, our innermost feelings, and to relate to ourselves as possessing a particular feeling, a particular emotion, whether it be despair about our situation or joy at the simcha of a close one. In either case, the words help us. The words help us to express that part of ourselves which needs expression at that moment. And it may be that without the words, we would never be able to stand before HaKadosh Baruch Hu and express the simplest feelings, because we might not be able to find within ourselves what those feelings are. You know, in the 18th century there was a dispute amongst French philosophers. Doesn't matter what their names were, but they had the following dispute. They wanted to know whether speech was part of teva, was sort of something that is inherent in the nature of man, or whether speech is like the wheel, like somebody discovered it someplace along the line, but it's not teva. Now, interestingly enough, we can argue that Chazal, through Unculus, has already, or have already, answered that question. After all, Vayipach Ba'apav Nishmas Chayim, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Torah describes the creation of man, the Torah says, Vayipach Ba'apav, describes something that would be translated into God's breath being injected into the soul of man, some sort of a Renaissance picture you know, of a big Charles Atlas type person breathing hard into scrawny little, you know, Adam Harishon and producing some remarkable change in the history of the universe. But Ulpula says that this was Ruach Mimalalot. And even though I don't know exactly what that means, how to put together the words Ruach and Mimalalot, it does seem to refer to the quality called speech, that humanity was distinguished at the time of creation by its ability to speak and to say things. And so that if Rashi says, V'adam ayin l'avodes ha'adama, that there was no man to serve and to cause the world to be fruitful, and man was needed because only man could express prayer, and that the expression of prayer, as the Rambam seems to say in the beginning of Hichos Tefillah, was an expression of words, so that the Ruach Memalalah, it was the most significant thing about man, the most significant thing about man, about the creation of man, was that he was able to relate his feelings to the Ribbono Shel Olam through this faculty called speech, which was given to him at the time of creation, as Unculus teaches us. So that the words are of great significance. And it's not true, apparently, that all of the words are ours. And it's just a job that we have to distinguish them from some jumble of words and make sense out of them. In other words, spiritual life is not really a game of Scrabble. But there are words. There are words and sequences of words that would have remained forever a mystery to us. We would have never been able to say them had HaKadosh Baruch Hu not given them to us, or given them to Moshe Rabbeinu, who taught them to us. And these words, Hashem, Hashem, Ke'erachum V'chanu, are in that category. Who would be able to stand before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, bearing the weight of his transgression, knowing that a year later, I mean, just a year since last Slichah, since last Rosh Hashanah, since last Yom HaKippur, how much time has passed? And if we look into ourselves just a little bit, not all that much, not, you know, deeply analytical, but just on the surface, and we look at what we've done and what we have not accomplished and what we've been remiss about. I mean, who could in such a situation stand and say Hashem, Hashem, Kel Rachu V'chanun, as though to say with the utmost chutzpah imaginable, well, since HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Rachu V'chanun, then I guess it's all right. Or I guess this year will pass uneventfully. I will not be called to order on whatever it is that I have done, or that I have left out, or that I've been remiss about, or that I have not treated with great importance or significance. I mean, who could say the words? Where would those words come from? I mean, who could have that kind of hubris to stand before HaKadosh Baruch Hu and say, Hashem, Hashem, Kel Rachum V'chanu, and therefore, we are all right. And this is the tefillah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu taught Moshe Rabbeinu at the lowest point in Jewish history, the Chet HaEgel, the sin, the corruption of making the golden calf, which is another example. And I don't understand exactly what happened. It's not clear to me why the few moments that Moshe Rabbeinu was seen to have been late in returning to the camp of Israel could have caused a reaction which is tantamount to idolatry, and even if it is not exactly idolatry, as some of the Mefarshim explain, it is nevertheless close enough to make us, the Jewish people, look as though in just 40 days we had forgotten the only teaching that we had had, that we had received in Har Sinai, Anochi Hashem Elokecha V'lo Yeluch. That Chayta Ega, irrespective of what it was, certainly represents the lowest point in Jewish history that we could imagine. And it was at that point, when the people had no words, when Moshe Rabbeinu had really nothing to say about the value of the relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Am Yisrael, other than, what will they say? What will the people say? Which probably means that HaKadosh, that Moshe Rabbeinu was saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, arguing that after all, Yitzias Mitzrayim was not only for the Jews and their relationship to God, but Yitzias Mitzrayim after all was for the world, for everyone, as the Ramban explains at the end of the Parsha of Bo. But Moshe Rabbeinu was saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, look, it's true, I have nothing to say about Klal Yisrael. But Lama Yomru HaGoy, what about the world who's on its way, who's taking a step to understanding that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has dominion over the created world? What about that? I mean, a weak defense, surely. A defense that does not include the defendant. A defense that is about the rest of the world who did not participate in the Chet HaEgel. That's Moshe Rabbeinu standing before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu, here are the words. Here are the words. They work. They don't work because they are a mantra. They work because they express the truth that is within us, but a truth which we are unable to say unless HaKadosh Baruch Hu authorizes us to say those words. Yes, we throw ourselves upon divine mercy. Yes, we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is merciful. They even know the comment of the Arizal that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world only to express mercy. Right? Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu create the world? I mean, what was missing? What was needed? What was lacking, so to speak, in the universe run by HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Well, the Arizal said it was Rachamim, and he understood that that was the ultimate reprieve that Klal Yisrael received. Not that they deserved it, not that they had the goodness, not that they had risen to great heights. Actually, they had built the golden calf. They deserved to be destroyed. There was no reason for them to stay alive. And yet, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe Rabbeinu, here are the words. Let them say these words. Not a mantra. Words that are true. They're found within us. We know that they're true. We just can't say them. And in order to say them, we need HaKadosh Baruch Hu's specific permission. Understand, it's not words that we received that no one knew about. Everybody knew these words. They just couldn't say them because they understood that they'd used up all the credit that they had been given min hashamayim, and Moshe Rabbeinu came to them with a new line of credit. He said, it's all right. You can say the words. You can say the words Hashem, Hashem, Terachum V'chanun, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given them to you. Not that they're not within you, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given you the opportunity to say them, something that you would never have taken on your own. And if you look in the Slichos, just just to remind ourselves, the slichos therefore are made up primarily, this is already found in the Siddur of Amram Gaon, of the Yud Gimel Midos, those psukim that begin with the words Hashem Hashem Kerachon V'chanon, like at the beginning of the pasuk Vayavo Hashem Apono Vayikor Hashem Hashem Kerachon V'chanon Erech Apar V'av Chesed V'mes. Those are the words. They're introduced by a short introduction which we will look at in a moment, and those words again are further introduced by a list of psukim, by a list of psukim which begin in this addition. All the slichos in this case are the same, with the words, first we say Ashrei, I mean just to make sure you get your bearings, first we say Ashrei, the Ashrei that we say is an Ashrei of Shevach V'Hodoya. Ashrei contains psukim of Shevach V'Hodoya. Before we stand before HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a manner similar to Shemona Esrei, we say Shevach V'Hodoya, right? That's how Shemona Esrei begins. After we say the Shevach V'Hodoya, we say Chatzi Kaddish. Now this is reminiscent, of course, of Mincha, for example. That's how we daven Mincha. We say the Ashrei of Shevach V'Hodoya in order to separate the Ashrei of Shevach V'Hodoya from the Shevach V'Hodoya of Shemona Esrei. We do an act of separation, which is saying Chatzi Kaddish. We say Chatzi Kaddish, and then we immediately say the Ikar, what we want to say. And what we want to say consists of two things, a list of psukim and the Yud Gimel Midos, which are also psukim. Right, a list of psukim and the Yud Gimel Midos. And in the Siddur of Amram Gaon, these psukim already appear. The Achronim have written, another Rabbi Yashiv Paskin, Halacha Lemaaseh, that Slichas consists of both of those things, the Psukim and the Yud Gimel Midos. And therefore, if possible, you have to say both with a minyan, right? Both Basar, not just the Yud Gimel Midos, Hashem, Hashem, Kerachu Mechanim, but also all the Psukim that come before. And after you do the Yud Gimel Midos, they are usually also psukim, right? And those psukim also are part of, if you look carefully, I'm not going to do that now, but if you look carefully, you'll see, after the Yud Gimel Midos, there are different psukim that appear, and then the piyutim that divide up the saying of the Yud Gimel Midos, those, a piyut is a poem that is usually incomprehensible, as opposed to, you know, it is, even if you have like the Rosenfeld, or does Artscroll have Slichas yet? Artscroll Slichas with English? So they have in England they use the Rosenfeld Slichas, which is like one of the fattest books that has ever been published. You know, it's very impressive. So even if you have the English translation, or you can understand the English, it's very hard sometimes to figure out how the Hebrew became the English. It's sort of like, the people who translate it have also some sort of a like divine spirit that comes upon them and helps them to translate the piyutim. So these piyutim divide like the saying of the Yud Gimel Midos from each other. Every night we say the Yud Gimel Midos a few times, like usually four, and there's a piyut that sort of divides it up so we could start over again. Right, so naturally, if you're davening with a minyan and you're a little behind in the piyut, and they start saying the Yud Gimel Midos, and they get up to the Yud Gimel Midos, of course, what you should do, and this is something they never told you, but you should skip. In other words, the piyut, saying the piyut is the least important part of the slichos. The most important parts are the Yud Gimel Midos and the psukim that precede and follow. The first, in the beginning, there are a lot of psukim that precede, and then there are a few psukim that follow every time you say piyutim. Tonight, Erev Rosh Hashanah, there's an additional series of piyutim that we say, which I'm sure that Rabbi Wolf will direct us about, called akedos. You know, it's sort of like getting into the spirit of Rosh Hashanah. So we got a few more, like tonight. It's very, the slichas that we say tonight are the longest slichas of the Aseres Metzuah of all the days. And they are extended by references to Akedas Yitzchak and different kinds of piyutim. But I got back to where I started saying the psukim and the Yud Gimel Midos That's the ikar of what we do tonight. We also say vidui once according to Shita the Gro. We say Ashanu Badanu Gazalnu. If some achroner pointed out that there's some tefillos at the end of slichos. Again, psukim and tefillos. And some the psukim are psukim. You have to say the psukim like you have to say all the other psukim with the minyan and the. And at the end there's some Aramaic prayers, right? For one reason or another, it's important to say Aramaic prayers also in the minyan, so that we have another kind of aspect to what's going on. The primary obligation is to say the Yud Gimel Midos, secondary obligation is to say the psukim that precede and follow the Yud Gimel Midos, the third obligation is to say the piyutim that divide the Yud Gimel Midos one from the other, and the fourth obligation are all the things that are tacked on at the end, Shema Koleinu and Hashanu Bagadnu, all of that is sort of like the next level of importance. The minyan, it's important to say that you'd go minyan with a minyan. You could only say you'd go minyan with a minyan. I mean, you could read the psukim without a minyan. You know, when you come into Chumash, you read those psukim, or if you learn the psukim, you could do it, but you can't say the tefillah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us, which is a davar shel kedusha, right? A davar kedusha, unless you have a minyan, so that the similarity to Shemona Esrei is extended throughout, right? There's Ashrei, Chatzi Kaddish, and then the Ikar, which is the Yud Gimel Midos that you have to say with a minyan, right? And then the Psukim, which you have to say with a minyan, and at the end, it's no surprise that the end of Slichas we say Kaddish Tiskada, right? Tiskada, it's a low sort of a Usam, is the Kaddish that we say only after Shemona Esrei. That's the Skabel Tzlos and Arusa. That's the Tefillah. We always say that after Shemona Esrei. So here, again, at the end of Slichos, following that pattern, the model, that this is somehow on the level of Shemona Esrei, because the Dovah Shukh Kedusha, it's something that came from heaven, right? It's a Tefillah that was davened up in heaven. Therefore, we have this Surah. We have this form of Shemona Esrei, without. One last thing, just want to finish by looking at the Shurat Tefillah that is said before the Yud Gimel Midos. I mean, there are actually, of course, since we're Jewish, there are two versions of it. But the version, well, we'll take the version that's usually, the one version starts, Kel Erech HaPayim, and the other version says, El Melech Yoshev. Right now there are good reasons for this, also in comprehension. I know that Rabbi Sal Reichert spoke about this, how Kel Erech HaPayim has to come before Kel Melech. I just want to look at the Kel Melech now, because we don't have that much time, and we'll be able to kind of summarize all the things within the context of this tefillah. This is not a pasuk. It's not really a long piyut. It's a short introduction. It's a short introduction to the Yud Gimel Midos themselves, right? It's I don't know who authored it, but it's apparently it's the time of the Middle Ages. What they call the Middle Ages. It's something an introduction to the Yud Gimel Midos, right? Introduction means that it's not the Ikar. Right, if you come behind, if you're behind, you have to say Yud Gimel Midos everybody. You don't have to say El Melech Yoshev, right? You have to say the introduction. However, the introduction is instructive and explains to us what we're doing here, right? What we're doing here. We say, Kel Melech Yoshev Al Kisei Rachamim. Right, you could say that on Rosh Hashanah, even though it doesn't make much sense. Because Malchus is about a determination. That's the way of Malchus. Malchus is clear. In Malchus, you're innocent or you're guilty. In Malchus, you're right or you're wrong. The closer you get to the Malchus of the Kodesh Baruch Hu, the clearer things become. Bereishis Bo'el Kim Malchus was probably the way that the world should have been created or was intended to be created. El Melech Yoshev Al Kisei Rachamim. Right? The Gemara says, we know that on Rosh Hashanah the Kisei is changed. Right? That HaKadosh Baruch Hu moves from the Kisei of Din to the Kisei of Rachamim. And so we say, Melech Yoshev Al Kisei Rachamim. That's how we see it. We don't in any way see it as a compromise of Malchus. We don't see it in any way as a limiting of the power of the Ribbono Shel Olam, nor do we see ourselves in any way as diminishing our acceptance of the Torah and its obligations. We don't see in any way a limit on the notion of all Malchus Shamayim, and we are fully accepting of all of those obligations, but Yoshev Al Kisei Racham. And while there might be some sort of contradiction there to the uninitiated for us, this becomes the essence of what's going on, especially on the day called Rosh Hashanah. Misnaheg b'chassidus. Misnaheg b'chassidus. What a thing to say. Chassidus, as the Mesillas Yesharim points out, in the 16th chapter, the 17th chapter, the 19th chapter, all of those chapters, the Mesillas Yesharim talks about chassidus and says, chassidus is the ability to find a little bit more of a mitzvah to do. Yes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a mitzvah, but if you look at it carefully, you know the halacha, you're doing it right. Chassidus is the quality which enables man to follow God's instructions even beyond what it seems God has instructed us to do. So, the Mesillas Yesharim says that if a person gives tzedakah, well, when you give tzedakah, you've got a mitzvah. But imagine a person who thought about giving tzedakah and knew that if he gave his money to the husband, then the wife and children might not benefit. And therefore he looked for a way to give the money to the wife or to the children so that the children would benefit from his tzedakah, which he understood was really what had to happen. So that's called chassidus, because it's not a new mitzvah, but it's looking at the mitzvah very carefully. And generally, we say that chassidus works, the Mesillas Yesharim says, chassidus works on the level of midah keneged midah. It's not sechar v'onesh. It's not that you get back as a schar for what you've given. Midah keneged midah means the world has operating principles like gravity. It's an operating principle in the world. Like if the apple falls, you know, gets disconnected from the tree, it will fall. And if your head is under the spot that it is falling, it will hit you on the head. Now that's the way the world is. It's probably also true for other fruits, and not only for apples, but I don't want to, you know, say anything rash right now. Now there's another operating principle in the world called Midah Keneged Midah. Operating principle. If you do something good, then good results from it. Good happens. Good is like a growth product. You know, you do good, so good things happen. Sometimes they happen to others, sometimes they happen to you. That's called Midah Keneged Midah, which has nothing to do with Sechar V'Onesh. The Torah says that the Sechar of Mitzvahs B'Hai Alma, whether it's the real schar or not the real schar, as the Gemara asks, that's basically, I don't have to know about that, but there's a schar b'olam hazeh. If you do shiloh hakan, or if you do the mitzvah kabed yisav yichav esimecho, so you get this schar of arichas yomim. That's called schar. That's not an operating principle or in the design of the world. That's midah keneged midah. So the Mesillas Yesharim says, if you do chassidus, then you get chassidus. There is a response. That's an operating principle of the world. Everything is full of chassidus. But Mesillas Yesharim never said misnaheg b'chassidus. And that's an insight that the Baal HaPiyut has about what we're talking about. That there's din and there's rachamim. And sometimes even rachamim is not enough. that Kel Melech Yoshev al Kisei Rachamim u'misnaheg b'chassidus. Misnaheg b'chassidus means HaKadosh Baruch Hu kaviyochol is looking for the cracks, any little place in which to stick in Rachamim. Do we deserve it? We don't deserve it. But perhaps HaKadosh Baruch Hu will find the place for Rachamim. Mochel Avonos Amo. Mochel Avonos Amo. That's what we hope. That's what we understand. That's what's supposed to happen. And then Ma'avir Rishon Rishon. Somehow, this is a Gemara. This is a Gemara in Roshana, Daf Yud Zayin. You look at the Gemara, if you look at Rashi, you'll see that it's not easy to understand, but somehow, Ma'avir Rishon Rishon, that each one, if you look at each one separately, the chances for Rachamim increase. If you judge the Klal as a Klal and what it's accomplished in history, then our situation is worse. Right? That's what the Paitan says. It's not that we are wiped clean or that we've been forgiven for aveiras that we have done, but the chatoim and the poshim, they're the ones who sin and the ones who transgress, they are the ones who get mechila, even though they have their chatoim and they have their pshios. Oset stokos and kolboso v'ruach v'lo kirasam. Stokos is like chassidus. Right? He looks for, again, for the crack in which the chassidus could be implied, to cry, applied to Klal Yisrael, to the pratim, to each individual in Klal Yisrael. And then, suddenly, the Paitan says, Kel, Kel. This is a story for another time. Why the shame that's used of the Rebbeinu Shleiman is a shortened shame. Like not Yudke Vovke, not Aleph Dalad Nun Yud, not Elokim, right, but Kel. Kel. Hareis Olono L'mashlosh Yisrael. Going back to what I said at the beginning, HaKadosh Baruch has taught us, has directed us to say the Shlosh Yisrael Midos, because we can't find within ourselves the ability, the opportunity, the lack of humility to say those words on our own without being directed. U'schor lano hayom, schor, another message for the day. Schor lano hayom, which could be the day of Rosh Hashanah, even though we don't say it. Viduyim on Rosh Hashanah. U'schor lano hayom b'ish shlosh esrei. There was a bris of shlosh esrei, the third bris. The first way the world was created was b'reishis b'elokim. And the second way that the world was created, Beyond Baruch Hashem Elokim Din and Rachamim, together, and finally, the world's existence was put into the context of Hashem, Hashem Ker Rafum Gechanun. That's Cholano Hayom Bri Shlosh Esrei. Kodato Le'onov Mikedem. As you made clear to the honor, to Moshe Rabbeinu, who was called an Onof, the Chen Kosuf. So we have the summary. The summary is that these are the words that we say, not because we think, or we come to the Rebbeinu Shalom with a ta'ana. It's not as though we say, oh, the Rebbeinu Shalom, you are so merciful that your mercy can include us as well. That's not what we're saying. We're saying, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you told Moshe Rabbeinu that we can say it. If you hadn't told Moshe Rabbeinu that we could say it, we would never be able to express those words on our own. And furthermore, you told Moshe Rabbeinu, and we have nothing to do with this, that it'll work, that if we all get together and we say the words of Yud Gimel Midos, the Hashem, Hashem, Terachu V'chanon, that it will work. And so, that's what we are about to do. We're about to say the words that were given to us by HaKadosh Baruch Hu and transmitted by Moshe Rabbeinu at the time when Am Yisrael was a nation that had no words, because there were no words in the Ruach Memalala that was created by HaKadosh Baruch Hu that could express an emotion that would be seen as reasonable at that particular time. We knew that we were accused, and we knew that we were guilty, and there was simply no way for us to imagine that the mercy of HaKadosh Baruch Hu would extend to this situation. And in fact, if you read the parasha of Kisisa, the first thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu is that we must destroy them and we will rebuild a nation of your children and grandchildren. And so they knew. All of Bnei Yisrael knew that there were no words that they could say, that there was nothing that they could argue, and that they had pushed beyond the boundaries of mercy. And yet HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to them, it's a new world. It's a world of Kel, Rachum, Mechanun, Erhapayim, Rafeset, Ve'emes, Notze Chesed, Lalafim. It's a world of Rachamim, it's a world of Chesed, and it's a world of Ma'alokim, it's a world where the source of the Ovos works for the children. It's a new world. It's a new world in which you could speak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a way that you could not have imagined. That even in the world of Rachamim mixed in with Din, or Din mixed in with Rachamim, that you would be able to speak. And this is the great revelation that took place for Bnei Yisrael after the Chet HaEgel. And this is called the Brit Shlosh Yisrael. It's a new covenant, because as every covenant enables Klal Yisrael to exist and to remain and to be part of the history of the world until the end of days. That's what a covenant is. That's Atem Nitzavim Hayom Kulchem. Right? Nitzavim, you're standing. You're in the covenant. And by being part of the covenant, you're guaranteed your future Ba'olam Hazeh. This world is your world because you are in the covenant. But before the covenant of Nitzavim, before the covenant of Kisavo, which details the obligations, the responsibilities, and yes, the punishments for those who will not be able to maintain that covenant, there is the Brit Shlosh Yisrael, without which we could have not lived, and there would be no existence. And our continued existence, annually, the standing before HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we do on Rosh Hashanah, is a function of that Brit Shlosh Yisrael. And that's what the Slichos are about. And we say the Slichos during this period that precedes Rosh Hashanah until Yom HaKippurim, because we know that this is a very critical time. And even though we're not sure always what time of the day is the most critical time, but we're sure that in general, this is a critical time of the year. And we take advantage of that critical time by announcing that we learned that lesson from Moshe Rabbeinu, that Hashem, Hashem, Kehanu Rachum.